Fierce Athlete Podcast.
We are female athletes being raw and real about the joys and struggles of life, both on and off the field.
We share how faith can both heal our wounds and reveal true beauty. Welcome back, everyone, to the Fierce Athlete Podcast. My name is Sam Kelly, and I am so excited to be continuing our Fighting for Women in Sport miniseries. Our guest today is a current NCAA volleyball player. She also is a Young Women for America ambassador, and I'm just thoroughly impressed with her maturity, her grace. You know, I've been spending some time watching her on Fox News and just so encouraged by her courage to fight for women in sport. And so today we have Macy Petty joining us. Welcome to the podcast, Macy.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
You are so welcome. Well, Macy, we have been just spending some time trying to shed light on, I mean, all of the issues in women's sports. That's one of the reasons Fierce exists, but specifically men being allowed to compete against women in sport. And I know that this is an issue that is close to your heart and something that you have been advocating against. But before we get there, I would just love to get to know you. Who is Macy Petty? Give us a little bit of your background related to family, volleyball, faith, and then we'll get on to some of the more controversial stuff.
Yeah, great. Thank you so much. I am so blessed to be here. I, like you said, my name is Macy Petty. I'm from Rock Hill, South Carolina. I'm currently playing volleyball at an NCAA school in Tennessee. I had no ambition of ever getting into politics ever. That was not something I was ever interested in. But first and foremost, I am a Christian. And so I know that the Lord is the one who has plans for me, and he called me to this. And, it's kind of a crazy story, but I said no originally, and then he just stirred my heart and I said yes. And so here we are today, and it's been really cool just to lean into that and honor him and how I'm trying to go about this, like you said, with grace. But yeah, that's been kind of the biggest part of me being able to have that courage is being able to stand on truth and lean into God's word. But that's kind of the biggest part about me. I love volleyball. That's why I worked so hard to become an NCAA athlete so I could keep playing as long as I can. I am now a senior, which is so crazy because it goes by so fast. Mm-hmm. Crazy to me that I only have a couple of months left, but just trying to take it all in and enjoy it while I can.
That's amazing. And I mean, obviously you're I'm just struck by how grounded you are, how mature you are. You know, was your faith and the love of volleyball, was that something ingrained in you from a young child? How did you kind of grow in the love of, I'd say, both of those things?
Yeah, I was really blessed to go to a church with little sport leagues for elementary school kids, which looking back on is such a cool thing because you get to teach so many amazing lessons to these kids who don't really grasp the big life issues yet. But when you can relate it to sports and something that they're going to love, it's something that's really cool, and it makes the gospel so accessible. And so my parents, they're amazing, and they let me play basketball and volleyball in this little sports league, and I loved both of them. But there's something about volleyball, and they joke about it all the time. I had this little I don't even know how to describe it. It was a cord that would attach to my hips to a volleyball, and I could stand outside and serve. And it would like bungee back to me. And so I'd sit outside for hours. I was homeschooled, so I could do this. I'd sit outside for hours. This is my PE time. Sit outside for hours, sitting and learning how to overhand serve. And so I was the first kid in elementary school, I was probably fourth grade, who learned how to overhand serve. And I just kind of caught this bug, and I was like, man, this is so fun. Like, I get to hit the ball really hard and just keep sitting outside and learning how to hit it harder and harder. And then eventually started talking to colleges. Probably eighth grade is when I made that decision of like, yeah, I'm going to chase after this. I'm going to play club volleyball, sacrifice all my weekends. Never got to go to prom or anything like that, but I just loved the game so much and had this passion for it, which has been really cool to see the Lord develop and use that in different ways obviously this is one of them, and being able to grow relationships with other people and learn different life lessons from it. So it's not something I would trade for the world.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. And I know a lot of our listeners can relate, right? It's like this love and this willingness to sacrifice for that. And, you know, it sounds like for you, that was kept in order because from a young age, you learned that faith and sport go hand in hand.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, and it is a way to honor and to glorify the Lord. And that's so beautiful. It's funny. I had a similar contraption with a soccer ball attached to it, you know, where it's like attached to your, I don't remember if it was your waist or your other ankle or something, but kick the ball out and recoil back in.
It's some parent who got tired of running after and shagging the ball for the kid. They're like, we just need to make this to where the kids are completely independent.
Oh my gosh.
Right back to them.
Yeah. Or have you seen, like, this is so random. I just saw a video the other day with like a dad with a, like a wiffle ball on a fishing pole and his son.
Oh yeah. Hit
it, and then he just reeled it back in.
Yep. Yeah, a lot of those things came out of COVID, I'm convinced.
Yeah.
Because I'm the one who couldn't get in the gym during COVID, and I was a COVID senior, and so I was going into my freshman year, and I was like, I need a hand on a ball. And so I would go outside, and there was all kinds of videos of, like, people setting up diagonal wood panels, and you would just hit against it, and then it would come back, and then you could hit it again. And, like, people got so creative to figure out how you could keep getting reps even when you couldn't get in the gym.
Yeah, that's so fun. So awesome. Okay, well, let's shift a little bit. So just because I know kind of your story a little bit and the timetable of this. So you have this beautiful dream to play college volleyball. And you're looking to get recruited and something happens. So kind of walk us through what happened and how that has motivated you, I would say, to, you know, like you said, it was never your plan to be a, you know, political activist, but here we are, right? It's not even that. We're just fighting for truth, you know?
Yeah. It's like common sense and just whatever.
Yeah. 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 So anyway, you know, because this is happening like 2018, 2019. So you're really ahead of the curve.
Right.
With seeing, you know, what was happening. So anyway, before I give away too much.
You're good.
Go ahead. Yeah.
I play volleyball. I'm sure a lot of your listeners know that in volleyball specifically, college recruiting doesn't really happen in high school. That's not an effective way of recruiting because everyone's everywhere in the country, right? But then in club season, we would all kind of congregate to these big, massive volleyball tournaments every weekend, different place in the country. And that's where all the college recruiters would go. And they would go evaluate your skills and maybe give you that phone call about an offer. So I was at one of these tournaments and walked up to the court, and mind you, this was a female only league. It wasn't co-ed. There was boys courts on the other side of the convention center, but I walked up and there's a boy on the team. I was like, this does not make any sense. Very obvious, not only in athletic ability, but also, you know, like basketball shorts, things like that. And so my teammates and I were really confused. Volleyball nets are over 7 inches shorter for females than they are for men. So it was completely unfair, not only net height, but ability to jump, strength, everything like that. And so this athlete was just slamming the ball in our faces. None of us were injured, which is not something that I take for granted because I know that several girls have been hurt having to play against men. So we sat there in front of all these college recruiters and had the ball slammed in our faces. But at the time, I didn't think anything. I mean, I thought of something of it, but I was like, okay, this is obviously cheating, right? This wasn't a debate happening on the national stage. I thought it was obviously, okay, one of the governing volleyball associations is going to put a stop to this. You know, I don't need to, you know, go on Fox News and tell everybody about it. And so I just kind of continued. Everyone was horrified that happened, but didn't think that there was anyone who was actually thinking this was okay, right? And so life went on. By the grace of God, I did get a volleyball scholarship and an opportunity to play at the collegiate level. And then in my freshman year, I'm a senior now, freshman year, my mom called me and she was like, hey, I had this conversation with this guy and they're hearing a save women's sports bill in South Carolina. Like I said, I'm from South Carolina. And I was like, oh, what? She was like, yeah, you know, so it basically says that boys have to play on boys teams, girls have to play on girls teams. I'm like, that's the stupidest bill I've ever heard in my life. Like, why do we need to even say this? And so she was like, I don't know, but I told him what happened to you and he wants you to testify. And I was like, you know what? Like, okay, like that's kind of cool. At this time, no ambition for politics or anything like that. But I was like, that's cool that the man who happened to have this random conversation with my mom is now this sweet mentor in my life, and really helped me kind of get into this. And so similar thing happened my sophomore year. They called me and it was Young Women for America. I had just recently gotten involved with them, kind of felt the Lord stirring my heart specifically to the abortion issue. But I got a call from them and they're like, hey, we know you testified on this in 2020 or the end of 2020, either end of 2020 or beginning of 2021. And they're like, can you do it again in Tennessee? Cause my school's in Tennessee. And I was like, no, sorry. I have practice. And I hung up, you know, that's classic. You're listening.
Yeah.
I copy and paste. So nope. Sorry. I have practice. And then I felt this stir and like, honestly thought I was going to throw up. I was like, something is going on. I have got to call them back. And I was like, mom, I don't know what's going on, but like, I have to go. I have to testify. I had no idea why this was such a big thing. And so I called my coach. I was like, coach, I just need to let you know what's going on. Like, you have every right to say no. And she was like, nope, you're right. You have to go. And I was like, wow, this is crazy. The very next day, Leah Thomas won a national championship.
Wow.
For swimming and diving. And so I was able to go to that also the day after I testified and stand outside, talk to the athletes, hug parents who just kind of felt silenced because they had watched their daughters fight for this their entire lives. And the day finally comes when they can compete for a national championship. And then some dude comes in and mm-hmm. wipes them. Right.
Yeah.
So, that kind of launched this mission that I'm on today to try and defend women's sports. And, it's been awesome. I still currently speak for Concerned Women for America, which has been amazing. They're an awesome organization and keep Christ at the center of it all, which allows for a lot of grace in the conversation also.
Mm. Yeah. To your last point, that's what was stirring in my heart as you're sharing your story. It's just, you just see the Lord's hand in it,
mm-hmm.
you know, one, because it's not something that you probably would have, chosen, you know, on your own, you know, it was,
I don't know.
I mean, even just like the providential encounter that your mom had with this guy, who's now your mentor. I mean, that's step one.
Right.
You know, but then the grace to say yes, but then it's, when you had that moment, it's so interesting. I was in a prayer class last night and we're learning about something called discernment of spirits.
Mm.
So it's learning about when we are prompted, is that from God or is that from the devil? Right. Yeah. And you can kind of tell, I mean, the rule of thumb is as long as you're living a life of holiness, the Lord works through peace and the devil tries to disrupt. If you're living a life of sin, the Lord's going to try to disrupt because he wants to bring back to truth, where the devil's going to say, this is great. This is pleasurable. Right. Like, keep going. But you're, you know, at this point in your life, you're living a life of virtue, mm-hmm. and you hang up the phone and the Lord's just kind of like, you know, he stirs in your heart a little bit. Like, that's not what I want. You know, he kind of moves you right away from what he maybe didn't want you to do. And just, you know, I mean, obviously you still have free will to choose, but there was this kind of like movement, I think, of the spirit in your heart to say, I gotta do this.
Yeah, right.
And that's just, that's beautiful. And I'm so grateful too for your coach,
yes.
just for her. I mean, yeah, you kind of hear, and I think that's one of the frustrations in this movement right now is coaches are silenced and their hands are tied, right? In many regards. You know, the Oberlin lacrosse coach just came out and kind of shared her story, which is beautiful. But for a coach to fight for truth alongside you, even if it's not outward, it's giving you permission to do that. Like, that's just beautiful.
And I really appreciated that about my school. It's a Christian school. And so they're not making any statements, but they're letting me have my own opinions and like, respecting that right. But also like they understand, like, if this is a call from the Lord, like, go for it. like lean into that. You know, it's not just somebody who is going off on a whim and, you know, trying to get famous. Like everyone says, like everyone's, oh, Riley Gaines is just trying to, you know, throw a fit about a loss. Like, no, this isn't about that. Like I said, I had no ambition of going into politics, but if it's from the Lord, like really going after that and understanding that, it's something I've really appreciated.
Yeah, that's incredible. So talk to me a little about how has that progressed? You know, obviously you kind of had this call to testify a couple years ago, and you're still active. You're still testifying. What do you see that's hopeful? What do you see that still needs work? How has kind of that journey continued for you?
Yeah. It's been interesting to just see it develop. Because like you said, I kind of got into it at a really early stage. For one, I think the biggest thing that I've seen change is it went from, you know, they might have a biological advantage, but, you know, we want everyone to feel included, to now just abandoning all truth and like abandoning all common sense and cutting it all off, saying there's no differences between male and female. It's totally subjective, you know? So that's been really interesting. And I've seen it become so dark, and the opposition be so confused and just immediately turn to hostility, which makes sense, right? Like we have truth and the God of light on our side. So it makes sense that the opposition is going to be so hostile to that. But it's definitely, I mean, you've seen so many stories of, you know, people getting attacked. We've been ambushed and you know, locked places for a really long time, just trying to get out safely. That's not something that happened very much in the beginning. Obviously, there's been a lot of protesters and things like that, but just seeing that hostile turn of like, they know they don't have a logical argument or one that's sustainable in any way. So they immediately turn to just shutting down the other side and trying to silence them. So that's been really interesting. But I've also seen a lot of support and people coming out and helping and trying to help mobilize other people and get the message out there. Because like I said in the beginning, I didn't think this was something that people were actually fighting for or something that we even needed voices on. But more and more people are waking up and supporting organizations and people and athletes who are standing up. So that's been very encouraging.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's still so much more to be done, but, you know, I completely agree with you and I see it, right? It's that classic light versus dark, good versus evil. And yeah, I think one of the frustrating things is you wish there could be more of a conversation. You wish it could be more rational. But like you said, when you're dealing with an irrational way of thought, right, it's not of God. And so individuals turn to, and I think it's surprising how quickly they turn to that level of hostility. That's disappointing. And you know, and that's where we have to pray for those individuals. But like you said, it's we never thought they would get this far, and you're just fighting for truth. I think one of the brilliant and almost sadistic or satanic, I guess, things that the opposition has done is they've created this whole new language. I've learned kind of a lot about how has this movement gained so much traction, right? And they're creating a false language. So, you know, even, you know, a transgender individual, it's like, that's actually doesn't exist.
Yeah, nobody,
you know, a cisgender, it's like, what does that even mean? That's me now having to like, justify what already is, you know, the opposition has tried to create this whole new class of person. I've been really struck lately, and Riley has kind of been leading the charge on this, but we're so accustomed to saying biological man or biological female. And that's even saying that there's something other than male or female, man or woman. And, you know, just that fight for language and the importance of, just reclaiming truth. I have a mentor who speaks on this issue. She's kind of one of the leaders in the Catholic Church, but beyond on this issue. And I want to make t-shirts to say this, but the other day we were kind of talking about, you know, do you create a separate category? Do you this or that, you know? And she, and I was like, but that almost acknowledges that this, not that people like we have to be so compassionate because people are struggling, right, with their identity. And I can't imagine the depth of that suffering, right?
And the absolute confusion.
Absolute. My gosh. And you know, the majority, if not all the time, there are underlying things that we want to help these people address. But she just kind of said, you know, I'm on team reality. And that line really struck me. The reality is that there are two sexes. There are male and female. And with tenderness and gentleness, but with truth, like that's what we have to continue to fight to proclaim, which is, we never thought we'd have to, right? But here we are.
Yeah. And it happens so subtly. And I agree. Like when I first started speaking, I'd always say, you know, biological men are coming into, I'm like, come on, Macy, biological men. Like, what is a biological man? yeah. And so I'm totally guilty of that as well. And just like seeing how far that goes back, even just like the subtle change between sex and gender, right? Mm-hmm. And how they were able to use that and be like, when they started replacing the word sex with gender, and then down the road, they're like, oh, it's actually difference between sex and gender. It's like, no, we have to like hold that line early. We don't say biological men or biological women. It is male and women. And like, even the slightest bit of change there, they can really take over in that. Mm-hmm. And you're right. That's how they slipped in there, is like, of really taking advantage of that. And so we have to be so, so careful about language, because we know mm-hmm. they'll use it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I preach this all the time. And it took me a long time to, I'd say, nail this down as well. But even just the concept of masculinity and femininity, you know, I always kind of believe this lie wasn't feminine. I mean, I was a little tomboy playing, you know, tackle football with all the neighborhood boys growing up, you know? And because I'm 6 feet tall and athletic, and, you know, I didn't feel feminine, but that's a lie, right? Like that's a little division there. And, you know, it's a lie that anyone can quote unquote be feminine, because we're a body soul union. That's our nature as a human being. And so because I have a female body, I am feminine in my whole being, period. I can try
for each person. Like femininity for me might look a little bit different than femininity from you, but just
exactly.
because my express itself in a like different way than what femininity for somebody else looks like, that doesn't mean that I like go and supposedly try and change my sex. That's not how that works, but you're right. Like God created male and female and masculinity and femininity. And I think that's a beautiful thing. And they're so complementary. And so being able to lean into that is really beautiful to look at how God designed us and what that says about who we are, not just in body, like you said, but in spirit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I want our listeners to be encouraged by that too, because right, the culture says you can change or you can choose, or there's something wrong with you if you don't follow the cultural norm of what's masculine or what's feminine, and maybe that means you're wrong. We don't define ourselves by a subjective cultural norm that changes, right? We have to define ourselves by objective truth. And that objective truth, like you said, is that we've been created male and female, and that sexual difference is beautiful and good. You know, the feminist movement, we're having such a good conversation here. The feminist movement did so much good for women, but at the same time, right, it was this, I have to be better than men as a man. And it's,
yep.
And it's no, we are equal, but different. I love men and I love masculinity and we need men to be men, but I also love femininity and I'm a woman. And that doesn't mean it's less. It's just different.
Right.
It's just different.
Right. Man, I don't want to go on a tangent here, but you're so right. And
go for it.
We can't sit here and let them say whatever makes you feminine and alters you from this male standard is inherently bad. No, that's not true. Like women have beautiful gifts. Pregnancy is one of them. And like mm-hmm. we need to really champion that and show that like what makes us different and what makes us woman is beautiful. And like we need to acknowledge that and thank our creator for making us so different and making us beautiful in our own respects.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So we give our female listeners. We do have some male listeners as well. We love you. But our
masculinity is great too.
It's amazing. And we need men to be men, even on some of these issues, right? We need them to stand up for truth. But for women, you know, there is this, to your point about the beauty of motherhood and pregnancy, there is this movement in our culture to say that that limits you, that holds you back. Your desire, your maternal desire is beautiful. It's good. It's ingrained in you. You can live that in many ways, obviously a physical mother, but we have this spiritual capacity to mother people, to support and love those around us, to be nurturing. But you can do that at the same time that you can be a fierce BA athlete. Like, they're not at war with one another, you know, like that's that mama bear mentality. We can be intense and we can be competitive, but we also don't want to divorce that or divide that from, yeah, that natural nurturing side. It's like, this is why women, we can't just leave it on the field. You know, like men, they can like tear each other apart and then like off the field, they're best friends. And as women, we are competitive, but we also, everything's linked, everything's emotional. And so that's good though. Like, we're hyper aware of how each other are doing, and that's a beautiful part of us, I think.
Yeah. And you said something that kind of struck me. You're like, the idea of that is like holding us back, but like holding us back from what standard? The idea of being a mother, like, don't tell me that is holding me back. That is like one of the most amazing and life-giving, literally, but like amazing things you can do in life. Like, humanity literally is dependent on mothers. And so how cool that we get to do that. Don't tell me that it's holding me back from some standard of like, oh, you might not be able to be some CEO or athletic legend because you're a mother, but like, hello, you're creating humans. Like, that is so cool.
Yeah. It's amazing. It's amazing. And to all our athletes, a lot of the lessons, just the virtue you learn through athletics is only going to aid in your vocation as a wife and a mother, if that's what you feel called to. Talk about, you know, endurance, ability to persevere, endure pain, childbirth, you know. Anyway, awesome. Well, this is so good, so rich. I really hope that our listeners have just gained some insight into truth. And, you know, we were reflecting yesterday as a staff, something that we want to continue to promote is the other side is so loud. You know, the culture is so loud and what they're saying. And I think it can allow for people of similar mindset to feel isolated and to feel like they're alone, to feel like their viewpoints are the minority. When in reality, they probably actually aren't as much as people think. And so thank you for helping me just give a language to some of these issues so that our listeners can find a home, right? Can find a home in truth and in this side. But as we wrap up, you know, a lot of our listeners are young female athletes, either college like yourself or even younger, aspiring to be an elite athlete. What advice would you have for them? I think, and I would ask if it's okay on a couple levels. I would say faith advice. You know, you're a beautiful woman of faith and your faith is clearly underlying everything you do. Let's start there. But then I would also love your advice in terms of sports, if they're you're seeking to compete at a high level. And then finally, just maybe overall advice of how to approach some of these issues, how to have the courage to speak out, even if it's just in a conversation with a friend. So that's three things, but I think you can handle it.
I think so too. First, as far as faith goes, the biggest game changer for me was just getting in the word. And like, I know that sounds so simple and something that everyone talks about, but like, you cannot stand on truth and like pour into other people if you yourself are not grounded. Mm-hmm. And so being able to be really diligent about getting in the word and getting in prayer is like going to give you this confidence like you are not going to get from anywhere else. Mm-hmm. And I think that's so simple. And as athletes, like that is so easy to slip up on, because mm-hmm. you're waking up at 4 a.m. and going to practice. In the spring, we had to wake up at 4 a.m. every day. Ooh. And I told myself, like, no, I'm going to wake up 20 minutes earlier. And even if it's a short devotion, like, get in that routine. If it means mm-hmm. I have to go earlier, then I have to go to bed earlier. But just like being so diligent about that, and it changes your day more than you would ever expect. I'm sure mm-hmm. you know that.
Agreed.
But that's just something that I've seen the biggest change in, not only in my personal life, but in my professional career and in school and athletics. Like, I've seen so many things change in my perspective, in my confidence and everything like that, just by doing the little things. And being really diligent about that. And when you have that stronger relationship and more of being able to pray and talk with the Lord and things like that, you're able to depend on that a whole lot more when you're in these situations, whether it be, you know, in a news interview or playing your sport. It's really cool. The second one, it was just sports advice, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So I play volleyball. And something that my team and I have been talking a lot about is what you do when you're down two sets, because you play a 5-set game and you're down two sets. The game isn't over, but it feels like everything is going against you. In a lot of ways, that can relate to this fight for female athletics, because, you know, the Biden administration is working against us, NCAA is working against us. All of these big organizations in these giants are working against you. But what are you going to do in that moment? Are you going to lay down and give up, or are you going to rise and like try and muster up every bit of strength that you can? And I think that that relates a lot to athletics, of just like making that decision to not give up at any point. We always say, like, until that final whistle blows. And so even when all things are against you, you might be down 5 points, you might be down two sets, whatever your sport you're playing, of just like of coming up and saying, like, no, it's not over yet, and I refuse to give up. So and then third one was just about the fight in general, right?
Yeah, just any advice of how to stand up for truth, I guess.
I've actually been thinking a lot about this in terms of volleyball, because obviously I've been talking with my team a lot because we're in season, but I was talking to my libero, and isn't super familiar with volleyball, they're the back row player that is basically running the chorus defensively. And so you might see these crazy volleyball plays of them making these crazy touches and like diving over tables. I've had teammates doing that. just getting things that look impossible to get up, right? And they get them up, and then it's the next player's job to just, you know, send a nice, easy free ball to the other team, and the ball drops. And that's the most frustrating thing of volleyball. Everyone talks about, you know, somebody makes an incredible dig or gets an incredible ball up, and then you let the ball drop. Somebody else wants the ball drop. So I've been thinking a lot about that in terms of this fight, and like thinking about how 51 years ago, Title IX was passed. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of this big, incredible thing where it seemed like it was impossible, but they fought so hard to get this passed and for us to get the opportunities that we have today. And so then I'm thinking, like, I'm not going to let that ball drop. Like, I'm going to keep this alive and keep fighting. And I get to sit here as a volleyball athlete, a collegiate volleyball athlete, which is so cool. I also have coached club and have gone to a couple of middle school volleyball games and think about the fact that, like, there's people coming after me, and I want to keep that ball alive so that they can keep playing and that they get the opportunities that I have. And so that really inspires me, of not slipping into that selfish mindset of, like, you know, I have my opportunities, I don't want to give it up, you know, but I have it. And so, just being able to really to fight for that next generation, for them to have the same opportunities that I have, because I know there's people, little elementary school girls out there learning how to overhand serve who will one day want to fight for this too. So I want to protect her opportunities.
I love that. Don't let the ball drop. That might just have to be the title of this podcast. Don't let the ball drop, right? We have responsibility, endowed from the Lord, but to fight for truth. And that's our call. And Macy, you are doing that so beautifully. I am leaving this conversation so fired up, so encouraged. So thank you. Thank you for just your yes to the Lord primarily, but through that, your yes to this fight. If our followers want to follow you, where can they do so?
Instagram and Twitter. I guess it's X. Those are my two main social media platforms.
Okay.
So.
All right. Well, we'll put those in the show notes. Well, Macy, thank you for being here. Know that we have been praying for you. Since I kind of got your name, I've been praying for you, and I would ask all our listeners to continue to pray for you. We want to be your support. You know, maybe we're just the fans for now, and as you play on this bigger court, but you know that we're praying for you, and we're grateful. And to our listeners, you know, I hope that you're encouraged to not drop the ball, to continue to fight. If you want to get involved, reach out to us. If you are a new listener, we hope that you enjoyed this episode, and we invite you to check out our other episodes, as well as follow us on social media at Fierce Athlete, or check out our website at fierce.org. To all of our listeners, thank you so much for all of your support and generosity. At Fierce, we are continuing to step up our game and fight for women in sport on this issue and other issues, but we can't do it without you. Please consider joining our monthly Fierce Athlete support team so that we can continue this mission. You can find out more information on our website, fierce.org. Until next time, everybody, God bless you, and know of our prayers for you. Play fierce.
Pray fierce.
Live fierce.